5. I almost said best of 3. We're back from Houston, Texas, where we had some Texas showdown.
I didn't even see you in Houston, Texas.
Bro, I was there.
Only on Sunday?
I was there all 3 days, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
What?
I saw Tommy.
Okay.
He helped you out. He said you got 17th, tied for 17th in Dragon Ball.
Oh, wow. Thank you. I don't even think that's true, but I appreciate that.
Before we go any further, shout outs to Die 1000 Deaths and Die by Sword for the subs. And this is not as good a time as any to introduce our co-hosts with the co-most. Steve, Ace King Offsu Jerk in the Blue Azure, and John, Velociraptor Guerrero. He writes for Event Hubs. Do you know about that?
With the did you say co-most?
Yeah, with the co-most.
Why not?
Yeah, you and me, we have the co-most among all of them.
I'm done with that.
Between the two of you, y'all got like 50% most between the two of you. All right, guys, tonight on the show, we'll be talking about Texas Showdown. We'll be giving you recaps. Steve is going to force us to talk about the great esports Twitter war of the FGC of 2018. I personally can't wait. And, John, you wrote an article about Nicki Minaj?
Yeah, I didn't want to, but she came out with another stupid video. We can talk about it if you really want to, but I'm just going to say
that actually happened?
I was just kidding.
We really want to.
I pulled that out of my ass, John. Did you really write another article about Nicki Minaj?
She came out with another music video. I'm not kidding. And, wow. And yes, I wrote
It's the music video for the song we talked about.
So yeah, it's the same one.
It's the extension.
Got him. We're also going to talk about the Capcom Pro Tour and their point structure. We had conflicting isn't the right word, but Michael Martin came out and...
it was pretty conflicting.
Well, I'm conflicted myself about it, but Michael Martin came out in a Wake Up Wednesday official Capcom Pro Tour esports video and explained to us what it's all about. Steve, you still with us? John, you're still with us? Great.
Yes.
And we've got a couple of things to talk about. So, why don't we get started with, first let me pull it up, the recap.
Let's do that. Let's kick off with the event that everyone was talking about. Episode 3 of E-League the Challenger.
Damn it.
If you wanted to watch it live, you had to stay up till like 1 or 2 in the morning, because this came on after a Star Wars marathon.
Hey, you know what? Did you just watch all of Star Wars?
Just
you
waiting.
Go ahead.
Oh, man. Rama in this topped anything in either trilogy. So, there was a 3v3 team challenge. There were only 5 players left, so they brought in a ringer, Lupe Fiasco. He picked a team. Guilty, who won last week's challenge, picked a team. They had a 3v3, and Team Lupe won. So JB won the battle between the two players who won, so he got immunity. He sent Guilty to the elimination match. Guilty selected the Ayasha. And it was 5-0. I don't know why that still says Sherry Genix, but Guilty, a 5-0 win over Dayasha, 10 rounds straight. So
I'm so excited now that it's getting down to the nitty gritty to see who's going to win this thing. I'm just
we're almost at the point where everyone left knows how to play. We're almost there.
well, next week they're going to go to a yoga session with goats.
Oh, wow.
Oh, sick. You know, now here's what would happen if I were running this show. I would make next week's challenge for immunity a handshake challenge, because Guilty is really good at those. If she gets immunity, then JB and Jesse have to play each other, and one of the people that are supposed to win will lose, and then it's interesting.
I'm more interested in what the hell's going on. I've seen this baby goat yoga shit. You literally do yoga. No wrong with that. And then they throw baby goats in the pen with you, and they're, like, hopping off of you, jumping over you, just generally, like, walking around you and probably taking little goat dumps around you. Why would anybody want that? I don't understand what the benefit to the yoga, the overall yoga experience is. Mike, you're an expert on yoga. What do you think?
Well, I've done yoga a few times. Never with goats, but I can imagine that it's probably about the same.
Except for there's goats.
A little more distracting, I guess.
If you're just tuning in, this is Best of 5. We're talking about Baby Goat Yoga and Infinity War spoilers. Have you seen it yet, by the way?
I've seen it, bro.
Shit, well, then it's not
pretty good. It's pretty good. All right. So we were talking about Baby Goat Yoga. Now, Steve, can you take us back to this recap, please?
Yeah, let's go to the tournaments that most of our chat is excited about. Starting with the Capcom Pro Tour. EU had its first online event this past weekend. It was for the Western EU, and it was won by Phenom, the man who's killing it over in Europe, taking it over Broski in the grand final. If you look at the sponsor names in front of all these players, and if you've been watching the Gfinity Elite Series, all of them are going to be familiar because all of them were part of Gfinity. Everyone in top eight, 13 of the top 16 finishers were in the Gfinity Elite Series this season. So,
and that's off. Why, that's probably why none of them are all that familiar to me.
Ho, 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 zing, got him.
That's going to be something we'll talk about a little later on. Good weekend for Phenom as well, because he was also named the player of the season in Gfinity after going undefeated in that competition. Let's take it over to the event. You guys were at Texas Showdown, the offline CPC event of the weekend, and it was a hell of a grand final, but it was Mena RD taking it over the best sponsor of all time, My Wallet Knuckledoo.
Is that, are you waiting for like a pause for laughter or applause?
Yeah, no, I used to sign up as Mom Velociraptor to say my mom was my sponsor. I thought that was a pretty good one too.
That's a good one. That's a good one, John. Yeah. Shout out to your mom.
Shout out to your mom.
So anyway, it was hype as fuck. The grand finals was, the room was packed. The energy was definitely, it was pumping. I tried to send myself some videos from my phone that I took, and I failed except for one, and I'll play it later. Cool story, right?
Yeah, that was the.
Is there anything else you can glean from this results page here?
You see a good weekend for Chris T making top six, Ricky Ortiz as well. Few names that we haven't seen make deep runs as of late. Chris T, Ricky, or. Christy actually won the Latin American event, but hasn't done all that well recently in the U.S., so good to see him up there.
Look how many points they got for it.
Yeah. Punk and Snake Eyes, after outlasting Justin Wong, Kaba, Alex Myers, Alex Valle, they each get 1 point. And we'll be discussing that as well a little later on.
We just got one... whatever these Twitch bits. Diamond things
got
are.
One bits. Bit for we the one bit, point.
Which is worth more than one Capcom Cup point.
It is probably worth more.
Yeah, so...
thinking himself, Jay.
Can I say something that actually contributes to the conversation, though, while we have this screen up?
That would be good.
Seeing, you know, watching... We haven't seen a ton of Snake Eyes as of late. He did really well. Won CEO last year. Made it to Capcom Cup, but, like... the dude has not been around, at least not to the degree that we've seen him and like towards the end of Street Fighter 4 when he was one of the absolute best in the business, right? Still a great player. Now we have Abigail and all that he, you know, we've talked about him at length. And though he's been toned down, he's still the Abigail that...
Snake Eyes,
you know,
thinks that Abigail sucks.
Well, that's the thing. We saw Snake Eyes bring out Akuma, Geef, and eventually Abigail in top eight. I don't know if he did it beforehand. But here's the thing. Considering, like, I've played Snake many times, and he's such a good player with reads and understanding what his opponent wants to do, similar to, like, what we've seen with Mena. Mena's kind of taken Snake's place in that regard a little bit, because I figure, man, Snake with Abigail, where you just make the read and it really, really counts when you do it right, that should have been, like, a match made in heaven, and he should be running Street Fighter V right now, even with toned down Abigail. But, like, that's not quite what we're seeing, and I was very sad to see that. And then he switched away and went to, like, Akuma and things like that. And I just think that there's a future with Snake Eyes and Abigail. I don't know if you guys agree or not, but...
I still think Abigail sucks. I honestly 100% believe that, and I think he's going to do terribly all year.
He's doing really well in tournaments, though. Like, he's not as good as he was, but he was way the hell up there.
There's really only Kubo dominating at this point, and I think we'll see. I don't know.
You don't think that... you know, a couple of character specialists might rise up if they decided to give it time.
You don't think that Snake Eyes, with his play style, could just do amazing with Abigail?
Nope.
Or Birdie. Someone in the chat just said Birdie. And I'm like, yeah, that makes sense, too. Just make those reads. So I don't know. That's all I have to say about that.
And we'll probably talk about Texas Showdown more here in a little bit after the recap. But one thing that I was super excited to see was the breadth of talent, because, you know, or at least the early narrative was like, damn, these ranking events ain't worth cheese. So will people show up to them? And yeah, they came in force, and there was a lot of heavy hitters there, and it was great to see.
Now, it is kind of seeming like, based on the people who are consistently doing well, that the cutoff for points will be a lot lower than last year, just because they are consistently going to the same people over and over and over again. But that could obviously change.
You're saying all the hikes.
Are we still going? Yeah, okay. All the points will be in the hands of a few, so, like, you know, 32nd won't actually need that many points because they've all been gathered up at first and second.
I mean, and if Mena, who is already qualified, any points that he gets are just eaten up.
Yeah,
right. And he just took first place points at a ranking event, and those 150 points are just gone, you know? So yeah, I think that that's a very legitimate argument to make.
It's kind of interesting, right? Because there's, like, even if you're at the top, you still go to events because there's still money on the line. Yeah. So those people will never stop going because they're already qualified.
Does anybody know what first place Texas Showdown got?
No idea.
150. For...
No, I'm sorry.
Oh, you mean
money
wise? No.
Yeah, the purse.
Not sure.
I don't know off the top of my head.
150 bits.
It could be. I do want to say though that there's a possibility that not only could there be another patch later on this season that changes things, but we saw last season. We had a few names dominate early, and then some of them either slipped down or stopped putting as much focus on attending events once their position in Capcom Cup was secure. So I don't necessarily think that it's guaranteed that we'll see the same names dominate over and over and over again for the length of the season. That may be the case now, but I think the cutoff... The trend in the cutoff line is going to increase a little faster than it is right now.
That's true. And it's kind of interesting, right? Because, like, we're talking about Snake Eyes coming back. Less than a year ago, Snake Eyes won Combo Breaker. Like, he won first place over Knuckledoo. It's just interesting how fast events appreciate and, like, depreciate in importance in our minds at this point. And especially, it's like a different season's a different universe.
And I mean, the schedule, especially this year, is going to be so backloaded. You know, we've got two premieres this month in Stunfest and Combo Breaker. And then you've got CEO and obviously Evo later in. But you look at September, there's five premiere events that month alone. You've got two more in October. So there's going to be a lot of movement towards the end of the season. Mm-hmm. Yeah, CEO now, as well in July.
Just to qualify something, I think I get what you're saying here, Steve, but just to be safe, when you say that there's a possibility that there might be another patch that would shuffle things up, like, that's just like, it's not completely unheard of, but there's been no word or inclination that leads us to believe that, like, that's going to be probably on the horizon, right? Just to put it in perspective for people.
Right, but there's nothing that says it's going to happen, but there's always that possibility.
Right, that's fair, yeah.
And then Javi in chat said that first place got 1,500. So shout-outs to Javi, who, by the way, lead organizer of Texas Showdown. So congratulations on the great event. He'd have some idea.
We're going to talk about Texas Showdown as an event later, right? We don't have to...
Yeah, we'll save our questions for there.
Then I will save it for then. But thank you, Javi.
All right, back to them recaps. What you say?
Yep. So... with both of those in the book, let's take a look at the global standings for the Capcom Pro Tour. You see that not a whole lot of shifting in the top five, but you now have two Dominican players in the global top 10. Kaba in number 7, Mena RD in number 8, Chris T just outside the top 10. And then you look at that logjam between 25th and 27th with just 10 points separating 8 players. So we will see we'll see more separation once more points are introduced with more events. But as of right now, it's a logjam for those final spots.
Hey, still, right now those 1 points are the difference between a lot of slots, huh? They are. They really are. I mean, I'm not kidding.
Not to mention the pride.
Yes, pride and accomplishment. That was not the only event at Texas Showdown. It was also a stop on the Tekken World Tour, a challenger event there. And once again, it's an event on American soil, so you know Anakin's going to do some work. He took it over Speed Kicks in the grand final. Shadow 20Z, what a run for him. You know, this is a player on the come up. He had a tremendous – he only lost – to the two people in grand finals. He almost beat Anakin to make top eight, and then he lost to Speed Kicks in losers finals, and both of those were by one game. He lost 2-1 and 3-2, so big weekend for him. You see Core, making top eight, the legend returning to the game, so good to see that as well.
Texas, if I'm not mistaken. I haven't seen that guy in a while.
He's from Houston.
Those deep blue eye color contacts. The anime hair. It's good to see him in there. He's doing well.
Had to defend home turf. So now if we take a look at the global standings for the Tekken World Tour, you see the top five still the same, but Anakin making the move all the way up to sixth. You also have Shadow 20Z, Joey Fury, and P-Lang in the top 20 as well. Let's take a quick peek at the Dragon Ball FighterZ tournament at Texas Showdown. And it was a rampage for Chris G, taking it over Hook Gang God and everybody in his way. Chris G ended up undefeated the entire time, did not drop a game. 18-0. Ridiculous run for him.
Duncan? Commentary on that?
On Chris G?
Yeah.
I mean, he was extremely dominant. A few of those wins were very close. He made several full last character Vegeta comebacks, which the whole weekend it seemed like no one could touch his character, and literally no one did. No one ever killed his Vegeta.
Wow.
The entire weekend. So,
go ahead, Finn.
He's like really brought his like slow methodical style to the game in a way that no one else really has. He's very commonly running away and doing almost nothing and letting people kill themselves, which is not a strategy we've really seen other people using. So it's interesting to see that he can make it work his own way.
We're talking about this. The Event Hubs guys and I were talking about Chris G winning and not losing a single game at this set at Texas Showdown. And then so you kind of put that in the wider perspective of what's going on in Dragon Ball FighterZ right now. And keep in mind that the earlier stages of a game are going to be incredibly volatile. Everyone's going to think that Android 16 is the best character, and then lo and behold, maybe not quite so much. Everyone thinks Wesker's broken, but then it turns out he's maybe A-minus tier, you know, back in Marvel 3, for instance. So you go, well, Chris G was like behind Sonic Fox, and then Sonic Fox was behind, of course, Goichi, who's the absolute best and still very much is. And then you got like Goichi's like training partners that are probably just underneath him and probably give Sonic Fox a run for his money. So it feels like Chris G is probably in that like third tier of Dragon Ball players if you were to break him up that way. But he may be dominating that right now. And I think the next kind of big after this weekend's performance, the next kind of big step for Chris G would be to take on Sonic Fox, like meet him in tournament, do an exhibition, whatever. But if he could do that, I think he's kind of poised to start to become like one of those big names that you talk about as like separated from the rest of the group. And that's kind of Chris G's style, too. He might not be the absolute best when a game first comes out, but the dude obviously knows how to play fighting games and at an incredibly high level, and he will get steam and he will be almost always relevant if he sticks with something. So it's going to be interesting to see where he kind of lands, but I wouldn't be surprised if we start to see a shuffle where Chris G begins to threaten, you know, Sonic Fox's status and things like that.
Definitely. I mean, he also improved his team a little bit since, like, when he was playing at Final Round and stuff, he dropped one of his lower-tier characters for one of the top-tier characters. So
made a lot of difference in the world?
It looks like it did make quite a large difference as far as his play style goes. So I really think that he might not only be able to take on Sonic Fox, but anyone. So, Damn. You know, Summit's going to be pretty interesting because you're going to see these people not only play, you know, once in a tournament bracket, which isn't always indicative, but you're going to see them play the whole weekend. So I think, as John said, we'll have a way better idea of where people actually are.
Mm. I'll tell you where I'm at, Steve.
Oh, go ahead. Go ahead.
Shout-outs to PewZera for the sub.
Thank you. It's also interesting to note that we're not too far away from the kickoff of the second season of the Injustice Pro Tour, or the Injustice Pro Series, excuse me. So it could be possible that however much time Sonic Fox decides to devote to labbing up for that takes away from his time in DBFZ. So.
Well, a lot of the best Injustice players have actually gone over. Toxin, Theo, Sonic Fox, all seem to be maining Dragon Ball at this point. So it'll be interesting to see how much they focus, back, as you said. One more note, I'm not sure if it's on the rundown. Was Goichi on the rundown, and what happened to him?
No, why don't you hit us with it?
Just on the topic of Dragon Ball. There was a bit of drama in Japan where basically Goichi had heard through the grapevine that people were saying that tournaments were more fun without him in Kansai because
he was so dominant.
And they did. He actually got really upset about it and said that he was wondering about not entering. And he got a big outcry of support from American players, and basically it seems like he cares again. But I mean, it's just interesting to hear that.
Can you imagine? I wish Donka wouldn't go to my locals and then not go.
For me, it's just interesting the way people take things differently. Because if someone said, like, Mike, you're ruining Dragon Ball for all of America, I'd be like, hell yeah. Like, we're gonna ruin it.
Get on my level, right?
I'm going to go to every tournament and just ruin it.
And, mock them, taunt them while you're playing and stuff like that, right? And then take their money. Yeah.
Yeah. He's something like 96-1. In tournament sets.
And his only loss is to his closest training partner and teammate, yeah.
Yeah, and that was
And he ended up winning the tournament anyway.
He ran it back. Hey, he didn't even get the run back.
I'm sorry, just a quick shout out to Beats by Noel Brown. He just subbed, and he's been subbing, if I'm not mistaken.
For the 80th month in a row?
7 months in a row. Mm.
Thank you.
Thank you, Beats.
Love that guy.
All right. But that's ridiculous. I'm glad you brought that up. I hadn't heard that, and it just seems so insane to me.
Well, I mean, he seems to have gotten over it. I guess I can understand that, it might feel a little bit lonely if everyone's hating on you for actually showing up to tournaments. He did win KSB, which was the Japanese major. A Ginyu player got second, which was interesting. It's very rare that you see that character at all.
Okay.
So,
put a pin in it, because we're not done with this recap.
Yeah. There's a lot going on.
Oh, did I? What do we have? KSB? Well, whatever. Keep going.
Yeah. Texas Showdown was more than just those three games. There was a whole lot going on. You see the list of winners for the official tournaments, including Base taking it home in KI, Stealth winning Infinite, Silent Scope qualifying for the Tournament of Legends by winning the Super Turbo event there. And then you also had Team Austin winning the Texas Regional 3v3. So Magneto 1080p,
that was the most
Rylander
for me, man. I was loving it.
Tommy Two Step, you guys get everybody in the studio gets to ride on their coattails. So.
Yeah, even Donka trying to get in on that victory speech at the last second. They cut away from you, dog. You hadn't earned that. You didn't earn that. But I'm Donka.
That's a team I would have been on a week ago.
Were it not for
me quitting the game.
fair enough. No, that was hilarious. If you haven't watched that, even though you're not from Texas, it was a fun tournament. You should go back and watch it. Hey, I noticed you skipped over the Windjammers results.
Because the winner of Windjammers was a total fraud.
I ran into Benji, King of Fighters player. He had some King of Fighters players from Mexico in town. And he was telling me, he competed in the Windjammers tournament. He was telling me, and this I thought was hilarious, that people don't use the top-tier characters because it gets too technical. Like, everybody sticks with the mid-tier characters, like Gentleman's Rules, to make the game still enjoyable and competitive, which I think is what's interesting. All right, what else are you taking us, Steve?
Let's go to Japan for KVO, KSB, a.k.a. KVO cross TSB. This is an annual anime tournament that's a crossover between KVO and Team Stickbug. You had Goichi, as we talked about, going undefeated again in Dragon Ball Fighter to get that win. Yuki taking Infinite. You also had Varios winning in Ultimate Marvel 3. Angelic was actually out there, and he made top six in that tournament as well. They had a bunch of 2v2 and 3v3 tournaments as well, so it was a good weekend for Omito. He won the singles tournament in Guilty Gear, and he also won the team tournament alongside Ruki and Tomo. So good weekend for him, good weekend for a lot of players. Go ahead.
As a small note, I mean, Yuki, also known as Cyber Agent Japan, it's kind of interesting if we'll ever get to see. He seems to be the best Marvel Infinite player. Yuki? He completely dominated everyone when they came for Evo Japan. He dominated everyone at this tournament, and he dominated U.S. players who came as well. So, like, the question is, will there ever be a point where we get to see Cyber Agent Japan, a.k.a. Yuki, play against the top American players?
Will we ever see Marvel Infinite rise from the ashes like a phoenix?
Because Evo would have been the chance for that, but at this point, as a side tournament, like, and I don't even think it's getting stage time. I mean, who knows?
It will be part of the community side tournament top four. They just announced that not too long ago. So there will be stream time for that game.
Okay. So maybe he will come. We'll see.
All right. What we got left, pal?
Let's close it off with the one that everyone has been waiting for in our chat. Smash Summit 6. This was, if you're not familiar with the Smash Summit, this weekend was sort of a taste of what to expect for Summit of Power. Some surprising results. Mewtwo King, one of the gods, but not the top god. He is your champion, taking it over Armada. Zane with an incredible run to third place. He beat both Mango and Plup in the bracket. You had Mango finishing tied for seventh. You had AMSA, good weekend for him. So a lot of surprising results if you're into if you follow the Melee scene. Pretty good tournament to check out. And that is it for our recap.
Many, many moons ago at an Evo, I heard people booing Hungrybox for playing lame, and I never watched another match of Melee.
Well, it's kind of interesting, right? This was considered a big weekend because he didn't win. Like, his play is that despised that any tournament he doesn't win is considered like a victory for their scene. It's honestly insane, like, how important that was. But not only that, but the Zane guy, like, for people to beat any of the gods is, like, so insanely rare that for him to do it multiple times in a weekend was a big deal for them, so...
You don't think a whole country told him it's not fun when you go to tournaments? And maybe he got his
Well, they do that to Hungrybox like every week, yeah, except they're a lot meaner than that.
I heard, didn't he have like some tweet once?
Where... I actually feel a little bit bad for. I've heard, I don't know anything about the guy personally, really. I've heard conflicting things, but the shit he gets is just wild.
Yeah, I heard somebody like stopped him in public. It was like, hey, are you Hungrybox? Go fuck yourself.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's that. No, it's like his Twitter is just filled with, if you like search at Hungrybox, it's just people telling him bad things. It's a little sad, honestly.
Hey, shout outs to Smain.com for the 444 bits and Dumperoni for the 100 bits. Really grateful for those. All right, so we still have plenty of topics to go through. Do we want to talk about Texas Showdown? I would like to.
Then let's talk about it.
It was great. The venue was neat. Oh, I got I'm debuting a new sticker. Check it out, guys. Look at this thing. Got a little cameo right there. Got her at Texas Showdown.
Oh, cool.
That is quite cute.
For you fans at home, or viewers, can't call you fans, you guys will know that this cameo is for the incoming baby girl that will be arriving in our family soon, Camila. So that's what that is.
Right? You know what's crazy? We just, in our scene, we just had... one of our players, he and his girlfriend just had a baby, and her name's Kemi as well.
Oh, cool. Well,
Efren stole it.
Yeah, I stole
yeah,
it.
Yeah, you're not original, by the way.
God, why couldn't my baby come early? All right, so moving on. Sorry, I'm not original. Sorry, Kemi. whoops, did I delete something I needed? I sure did. No, Texas Showdown. The venue was cool. It was a new venue. I think it was the first year in that venue. It looked like a fancy-ass ballroom with nice chandeliers and everything. You know, you actually competed in the tournament as well as commentated, which I want to talk about later. How did you feel about the competition setups and the way that the pools were running?
It was ran really well, to be honest. I have almost no complaints whatsoever. You know, things were on time, which is like becoming like it's honestly rare for events to be on time if they're not kind of like a, you know, Jabali / Rick event. And this was totally on time. Everything was great. The venue was cold. I mean, almost too cold is way better than too hot. So I can't complain about that. The venue is properly aired. There was plenty of space. Anything I say bad about it would be a nitpick. It was awesome. And I think from what I heard, it was great from Streamland as well. So great event. Glad to have it in Texas.
From the Stream Monster point of view, it looked really well. Like the Level Up handled a lot of the technical stuff, right? The stream. And it was, you know, to the point where it felt kind of like an esportsy event, you know, where things were regulated.
Don't you dare, John.
Well, it's important for the point I want to make later. So, but no, it came across as very professional, well done, done by people that know what they're doing. And I'm excited for that because it feels like that is becoming more and more the standard, the expectation. And the sooner that that can happen, where it's like we're not having like tournament, you know, brackets start super late and things go down all the time and whatnot. I mean, the sooner we can move on to bigger and better things. So I think it was James Chen that said that like this Texas Showdown was a return to like the former glory that Texas Showdown once was, insinuating that there was like, I guess, some recent years where it hasn't been as awesome as it has been before. And I don't know the details there. I think you guys probably would know a little bit better than I would. But all in all, it was a good event. Apparently both on site and from watching from the stream.
There was the bad years, just to specify, were under a different tournament organizer. And it's good that people were willing to, you know, put that aside and realize that Javi as a new organizer had no real ties to that. And it's gone great.
Y'all ever seen Godfather 3? Every time I think I'm out, they pull me back in. Well, somebody put a pool in the shitter, and then you needed to get Javi back in there. It was super hype. It just to clarify, if I'm not mistaken, Level Up, Alex Valle and his crew and Jimmy Nguyen did the, you know, they were on there with the cameras and all that work. But if I'm not mistaken, it was Panda's new outfit at a Frisco, Texas, with that new esports money that put on the actual set, the screens, the stage setup and everything. I have one huge nitpick, and I hope that everybody who was a part of this production is listening. Why can't you put one goddamn light on Ginny, the presenter? One light on her, dude. She's giving impassioned player interviews, and you can't hit it with one light? Come on. You know what? I'm boycotting Texas Showdown because of it. Wow. Ruined it for me. Nice. Ruined the whole experience. No, definitely they needed to put a light on that chick. No brainer. Put a light on her. Come on, guys.
This has been things Efren cares about way too much.
Oh, I just got my favorite comment I've ever gotten in the chat.
Right here we have Clouderism saying, yeah, Donka deserves a round of applause. I usually hate the guy, but he's pretty good at commentating.
I love that. If you hate me, but you can still put that aside to compliment me on something, that means it's even stronger.
And shout out to your commentary, dog. I thought it was pretty strong. I know you've actually, you know, you care about it. You've been wanting to you know, dip your toe more into that game, and I thought you represented yourself well.
Well, thank you.
And
I think you could have made someone fall in love with you if they were just watching randomly.
Somebody who might even like secretly DM you and tell you that you're just so sexy, and your commentary is like, you know, getting her hot and bothered.
Wow.
I wonder.
And that's intense.
I feel like that might actually be something that could happen.
Specific.
Yeah, no, I'm sure specific. I don't know why.
Real, but I mean, it could. Like, and if it did, I wouldn't be surprised if you told me that story.
Yeah, it would almost feel like I'd heard it before. So anyway, Donka got carried away on commentary. It's Ultra David. Got carried on commentary.
It's true. Yeah, I actually can David. Only. I feel like that is a skill I need. Is like commentating with a great commentator like David or F Word has always like. Been easy, but like commentating
rise to the occasion
with
what?
Someone who is, you know, newer has always been way harder for me because I'm kind of boring and I just parrot all the data of the game. So I need someone entertaining next to me.
Well, that was actually one of the things that, you know, I don't want to keep blowing smoke up your butt and letting your ego get bigger. Like we're playing, dive kick? And
dive kick, Jafaeli.
But I thought that was one of the things I appreciated was that you were explaining the frame data and all that shit and making it easy to understand. So. All right, enough, Donka. Shout-outs, but enough. John, you were watching from home, and you had a pretty robust recap article with cool clips and everything. What were some of your takeaways?
Well, I mean, as far as gameplay, that all spoke for itself. It was great. You know, we had a good variety of characters in the top eight, right? And there was a Cammy, but there were plenty of others as well. We saw a good mixture of different names, that being like, you know, you have your Capcom Cup champions, right? And then you have your Punk, who was really hot last year earlier on and then has kind of tapered off, but it's like he's there, right? And then you have Chris T, who's been around but have got really hot recently. And so you have all these different names of like different points in their career and different points in like their abilities. And it made for a very interesting and unpredictable top eight. Again, we talked about earlier how both Ricky and Snake Eyes, who haven't been too much in the competitive light as of late, making their way back up to the top and things like that. So the top eight itself was very exciting to watch. Luckily, Donka wasn't commentating top eight because yeah, I was just completely distracted by his supple voice. And oh, I don't know. I don't even know how to talk about it.
The sultry voice.
Sultry voice.
His skin
yes,
is supple.
Yes.
I'm telling you, I'm sitting right next to
him.
And
his
again.
Beautiful hair.
Don't forget the hair. Absolutely. The coif. I mean, it's second to none.
Wow.
But yeah,
Steve, don't hate on the hair.
As, but it was a good
hair doesn't do it for me. I don't know why.
You would. No, and then having like having Ginny do the interviews, those went over really well. Some players had more to say than others, and like they wouldn't say anything at all. Like, you know, it was super dry.
But it was hilarious. People, like, you heard it on the stream when somebody was like, "You guys suck!" when they like gave one word answers.
Right, right, and that was perfect though. And so it made for a very entertaining watch outside of the gameplay, right? When you cut away to either the commentary analysis, to the crowd shots, to the player reactions, to the interviews, all of those things, it was still very entertaining as an entire package. And I think that that should hopefully become the standard for all of our major events moving forward.
I'm going to try to download a video here from the event. What was crazy for me, of course, was the grand finals, right? Du versus Mena, and certainly that was, I think, at least a highlight for many people, certainly for me. To my knowledge, Mena had not yet won any CPT event, right?
Well, no, because Birdie's a terrible character now, and he's like the worst, and oh my gosh, what are you doing to him, Capcom? But
did you even try to throw an accent on that?
No, I didn't try to throw an accent on that. And then, I mean, in that same kind of vein, though, you had Chris T almost in tears with the Ken, you know, updates and stuff. But yeah, he's doing really good with that character and stuff. And we got to give a weekly Chris T disc, so there's that. But yeah, kind of want to go too far and derail this.
Well, a big thing for this weekend to me was that we saw like the Kaba drama get placed perfectly outside of that. You know, It went from like, I think it's exactly what everyone wanted, which is instead of doing it, you know, right next to someone and distracting them, doing it from the crowd. And from the crowd, instead of being distracting, it was incredibly uplifting. And it really brought people to cheer for the event. And I thought
it
was a huge positive.
Talking about. You know, that became the thing to talk about immediately after. Like, everyone appreciated the gameplay, absolutely. But especially juxtaposing it against what happened at NCR with, of course, for those who haven't heard, Kaba was rooting on Mena just like he would be doing at any other event, but he was very up close, and he did it when Mena defeated Goichi, and Goichi, of course, had a problem with it because Kaba was too loud and too close. And Efren, you experienced it firsthand, right? You even said in the chat, I'm not sure if he was going overboard and being extra hype or if that's just him. Kaba is over the top.
I honestly was like, okay, but okay, I was in the room, this is what I experienced, and I wasn't sitting next to the guy, but I was, you know, in close proximity to him. The people around Kaba were looking at him like, you're gonna be loud, you're gonna be loud, you're gonna start getting loud, yeah. And he wasn't being loud, and then he turned it on, and I was like, is he over the top doing it as a reaction to getting egged on, or is he really that loud? This is the first time I experienced it. It was really loud.
I will just say,
he's going to lose his voice in no time.
He's one of the best Guile players in the world, right? He's in the top 10 right now for the CPT. And he's been a very strong Guile player for quite some time. But I knew him very, very much as a loud rooter, you know, loud cheerleader type, more so than I knew him as a player. And I think that's true for most people, right? Because of how over the top he can be. But yeah, you would know him more as a cheerleader than you would as a player, but he's very much earning his stripes as a player as well, having won the Latin American online tournament, came in second last week, and had a decent performance this week. But so you're getting at him, you know, cheering from the crowd and such. And so, we had such kind of an – oh, go ahead.
Oh, no, I thought you were teeing me up. No, go ahead.
Oh, well, I mean, if you want to take it, that's fine.
Well, just for out of context, the energy that I was seeing, the back and forth, was then people started saying something to do. What were they saying?
Well, they wanted the reset.
Let's go do.
And now I had a question, though. Could you, if you were at the venue, could you hear what the commentators were saying? No. Was that being played over the PA?
Because you could hear it over the PA, but I could not make it. I never made it out once.
Okay, well, because there was at one point, and it was during Grand Finals, where David said something to the effect of, why isn't America, I want to hear America get behind right. you. And so what you have at these events, and this is something that's happened, I think, since the beginning of fighting game tournaments, it very much happens here in my local scene all the time. You'll all be under one FGC banner, right? We're all in the fighting game community. We understand that. But of course, when you've got two guys up there, you further the competition by kind of like splitting into camps, right? And like, I'm rooting on this guy, I'm rooting on this guy. And however you want to divide it, you're his friend, you're part of the same scene as them, you know, you're from the same place. This happened to be Dominican Republic versus United States, right? And so David goes, I want to hear America, or I want to hear the U.S. chanting for Knuckledew. And of course, we already had Kaba and the Dominican Republic guys cheering very loudly, waving the flag and everything for Mena. And it became so, it enhanced everything when the crowd got into it. And it wasn't this negative thing. You know, because like we just recently visited Kaba and he kind of got one of his first big spotlights and it was in a negative light because of the Goichi thing. This time it was the same idea. It was just from an appropriate distance back. You got both crowds going for everything, right? Just rooting for their guys. And it was a wonderful experience. And there could be that division under the banner of everybody in the same FGC, but I'm on this side, you're on this side. And that just made it more competitive and more fun.
Yeah, and I think what made the weekend not just that happened, but that it culminated in a win for MenRD for a couple of reasons. One, this is a player where the storyline was, oh, his character got nerfed. Now he's nothing. Now he can't ride that brain dead character anymore. So having him win just reminds people that, hey, behind that character is a very, very good player. And personally, I just love when people go into hostile environments and perform. And what happened right at the end of the tournament where Mena got the win, he immediately hushed the crowd while Kaba came up with the Dominican flag. And then after everyone spent the entire round cheering, Knuckledew, Knuckledew, he turned around and started a Knuckledew chant. That is exactly the type of player, the type of, well, not even a villain.
This is my shot here. This is mine for my phone.
That was ridiculous. That was perfect.
But I couldn't tell if he was trying to bust Dew's chops or because it was like,
he was busting the crowd's chops.
Right.
He was embracing that kind of like villainous, like, you guys don't accept me. That's fine. Let me turn it right back at you. And he did it in a way that he still had charisma. Right. And they might have booed him right there. And you could hear some of them actually start to do the Knuckledew chant with Cobb or with Mena, not realizing, oh, he's mocking us. And then they were chanting it while he was leading them to do it. But that makes for damn good entertainment, right? Like, that's what most of the WWE appeal is. I mean, that's very, the presentation and their physicality is great too, but the execution of the show, right? And getting these charismatic villains versus you know, baby faces and things like that. I mean, we don't want to devolve into making it all about that. But when it appears kind of organically, like it did here, and like it can virtually at any tournament, and you ride that wave appropriately, players like K-Bread, players like now we're seeing Mena, being able to do that, that's going to make for such a boost in the entertainment factor, and that's really going to help in the whole scope of you know, just the FGC's esports look. So I think it's a really good thing.
And it was entertaining on the back of those two actually being quite close. I mean, like, greatly, you know, like, congratulated Mena for winning, and Mena said that Dew is the reason that he's the level of player he is now. So they're that close, and they're still able to have a emotion-filled grand finals is cool. Because oftentimes, you know, if you see two people who know each other that well, it really fizzles out a lot. But this time it didn't.
Then the little interview ahead of time when he brought out, Knuckledew brings out his wallet to say... my sponsor, right? They cut to Mena, and he's like, all I know is that wallet was empty. It was hilarious, man. He's like owning that persona. It was really great. Anything else about Texas Showdown before we get into the great esports war, or some Michael Martin point structure response, or some Marvel's Capcom Infinite sold under 100,000 sales this past quarter? That's one that I know you're excited about. Or the Evo leaderboard with the signs and names, or how many signups. Or how about the Summit of Power voting update? Or the Dragon Ball FighterZ patch note. Donka walked
just
into this studio.
Just move on, Efren.
Donka walked into this studio today before the show. Was like, I'm pissed.
I am
what's
pissed.
Wrong, dude? That patch.
Maybe we should talk about the patch.
Let's go to patch. Let's do that.
All right, the patch sucks. No, I'm sorry. The DMZ patch came out, and I think it was a lot smaller than people were expecting based on what they had said was going to happen. They talked about system changes. They talked about character balance updates. And in reality, the big meme is that it was a bunch of bug fixes, except for a couple characters. Most characters got nothing of note. Basically, no one was buffed. And the system mechanics seemed to be essentially identical outside of a few glitches being removed. Mm-hmm. Notably, Android 16, who is definitely one of the higher tier characters, but maybe more so in a Wesker-ish way, where he doesn't seem to actually be as good as the top three or so, got nerfed pretty hard. Mm. He had, you know, a grappler knockdown that you had to guess out of, and they're getting rid of that. So he's
got nerfed. Does he have anything else? I'm not a DBFZ player, right? So I mean, I can appreciate the fact that Android 16 had hard knockdowns, and that made him a huge threat. It's not as big of a deal now as it was, and by now I mean that players have started to figure that out, and they're finding that, yeah, that's good, but that's not everything. But it was like the talk of the town for a while. So we see Bandai Namco nerfing that and getting rid of that. Does he have anything else, though, to fall back on outside of, like, I guess he has armored moves that can come into play,
that
right?
That also but got nerfed a little bit, after we mentioned that.
Oh, well, yeah, so did they just take away everything that the character had? Is he just going to be this shell?
He'll be okay.
Is it after the explosion and he's just this head on the ground? And, like, if you pick him, he's just a head on the ground that can't do anything?
Well, that's the meme, is that Cell, who was definitely better than him, didn't get touched. Like, completely unnerfed. And so there's the scene where Cell stomps on 16's face, and that's pretty much the story of the patch. I think he'll be okay, but he's certainly going to go down at least a tier, if not two. He won't be top tier. Gohan got nerfed too, and that would be, I think, the one people were more appreciative of. They nerfed him less severely. They got rid of, like, you know how he has those really long block strings where he kicks you a million times in the air? They made the kicks less plus, so he probably won't be able to do those block strings anymore. So that one seemed okay. I think people are just upset that they hyped up a patch and they really just kind of killed a character and didn't do anything else. And the story and the idea that people are going with is kind of similar to Season 3.5 with Street Fighter V, where there weren't a lot of buffs. They took away a couple top-tier characters, and now the characters who were top-tier that didn't get nerfed are just going to be the top tiers. So Kid Buu and Cell, the big idea is that Kid Buu, Cell, and Bardock and Vegeta are probably going to be gods.
Well, in the chat, DV just says, come play Marvel. We don't have patches anymore.
Jesus.
What you see is what you get, right?
Yeah.
I feel like, and I'm not an expert here, right? Like, 'cause I said I don't play the game, but it feels like the expectations for this patch and then what we're seeing on paper, albeit that the paper is a little bit vague. A lot of it's like, we fixed this thing, which was similar to like what we got from the recent Street Fighter V patch. So we'll wait until we actually get our hands on the game before we can make full judgments. But based on like what the expectations were for Cell to get nerfed, for a lot of these characters that were lower tier to get buffed, and like the relative, like, it's just a bug patch, I would feel like the pitchforks should be coming out, and I don't feel like they are. Maybe they are.
They are in the DBZ community. Yeah, if you look, almost even people whose characters didn't get nerfed seem to be upset about this. I honestly haven't seen a positive comment about the patch.
Well, yeah, I'm just saying because there hasn't been much negativity to be thrown at Bandai Namco, and they've been hitting home runs left and right, especially with Dragon Ball FighterZ. But I feel like I'm interested to see how people are going to handle this kind of a negative thing, like maybe a misstep by them. I'm not sure, but
it's worrisome because, yeah. I mean, the character variety in the game is already pretty weak, right? I mean, KSB top 8 at 8 Vegetas. All 8 people played Vegetas. We never saw that in Marvel 3. Never once, even in like the history of any small regional event, did you see 8 of the same character.
No, there's not 8 Dooms, nothing like that.
No, never did we have 8 Dooms. It was you get 4 maybe at some times, but even then, we had very few repeat characters even among Evo champions. But we're already at that point, and for them to remove a few of the good characters from the list, it just seems like it's going to be even less character variety than we have already. I guess the thing that bothered me the most is that they nerfed a few really small things that seemed like fun things the characters had. Like, Gotenks could re-stand you with his assist, and Piccolo could cross you up with his. And they got rid of both of those, despite those characters not really being considered amazing. So I don't know. I feel like it was a really poorly targeted patch, and I feel like hopefully they take the lesson from this, but we'll see.
Well, now asks in the chat, didn't Vegeta Assist get nerfed?
Vegeta Assist did get nerfed, and that's going to be the one that we have to see. A lot of people are of the opinion that he's still probably going to be the best assist, although any nerf to him is probably good for the game. But that one we'll have to wait and see. That could be the biggest patch note. Maybe Vegeta Assist sucks and you pick Goku Black instead.
And like the only information given though is fairly vague. Right? It basically might as well have said that. Well, it's the lockdown from the animation, right? Like he throws 6 fireballs at you. The idea is the lockdown's a little bit less, right?
The idea, yeah. So it's gonna do less. When like every ball makes the screen freeze a little bit, right? And it gives you more time to advance at them, and the freeze will be less. So it seems like you won't be able to make them block Vegeta from full screen and then dash all the way at them and get a good block string going. That seems like the nerf. It seems like everything else about it will be the same. But we don't really know
exactly what's going to happen. Like maybe they come in at a different angle. Probably not, because that.
Yeah, maybe there's less of them. Maybe you block it and now you can super dash out of it. Those things would all change the game a lot. So we won't know until tomorrow.
So one other thing that I forgot to mention at Texas Showdown was the nonstop crowd playing Soul Calibur. They had a demo there, courtesy, if I'm not mistaken, of Markman bringing it in, and there was some people playing. Moving on from that, let's discuss the point structure response. Steve, if you wouldn't mind teeing that up for us. I think, John, you also watched it and I think wrote something on it?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, so we can have a substantive conversation on why it's the best thing that's ever happened.
So we talked about last week the fallout from this idea of how Capcom restructured their points for the 2018 tour. Michael Martin, who is involved with the esports communication side, came out with a Wake Up Wednesday video to help explain some of the thinking behind their decisions. He also clarified the regional finals. So let's start with that. There was a little bit of confusion as to what that would be. We actually have a graphic that we can pull up quick. Yes. Should be the first one. Yep, there we go. So he clarified that it's a 2-day event, which we already knew. It's 2 separate tournaments. The first one is a premier event that's open to anyone in the world who shows up. If you place in the top 48, you get points towards the global leaderboard. The one thing they clarified is that in terms of being a regional event, it counts as a ranking event towards that region's leaderboard. So, example, if Mike, you go out to the regional final and you win it, you get 700 points for the global leaderboard. But in terms of figuring out who makes the regional final on day 2, you get 150 points towards that. So,
that's of course only if you are of that region, right?
Correct. So if Tokido came in and won, he'd get the 700 points for the global leaderboard, but he would not be eligible to earn anything for the regional leader.
It's okay. I'll just get 700 ranking top 8s instead.
You do that. And then regional finals make up day 2. That will be the top 8 players in the region determined after the conclusion of the day 1 premier event. And then whoever wins that qualifies for Capcom Cup. If they're already qualified through points, that spot will pass down to the top player in the region who is not qualified. So being near the top of the regional leaderboard is important. And then he went into some of Capcom's thinking for why they changed the point structure from 2017 to 2018. Here's one of his quotes. He said, quote, "Our expectation was for 2017, 400 points would be enough. If you won a premier event, 400 points would be enough to qualify for Capcom Cup. Unfortunately, that was not the case."
What simulation did they Okay, never mind. Just keep going.
"The amount of points you needed far exceeded our expectations, and a player needed at least 700 points to make it into Capcom Cup at the end of the year. So we crunched numbers, we ran various scenarios, and concluded that for our current format achieves the goal for bringing inflation down while at the same time maintaining the competitive nature of the Capcom Pro Tour. So in essence, they wanted a system where if you won a premier event, you were in Capcom Cup.
To which Elon, our TD, said, well, why not just bring back the auto qualifiers?
That was my thought, but...
That,
I thought that also, as well.
It appears that we all had that thought.
I don't know why, but I kind of get what they were trying to do. I don't agree with it. I think the system was pretty close to perfectly fine as it was last year. But more so, I'm not so bothered with, you know, the thinking behind it. I'm more bothered as to the effect, and this is something I've said before. The big effect of nerfing ranking events to this degree is that you're telling people that these events don't matter. You're hurting not just the perception of those events, but also the attendance. You know, my fear is that as we get farther and farther in the season, people who aren't necessarily getting these first and second place finishes are thinking, man, do I really want to go all the way over to Brazil or to England to get, you know, 5 or to get 10 points if I don't win? And that hurts those events too, because they're the ones who need the big names to come out in order to spur, you know, local players to come out and drive those numbers up. So I think they're really hurting that aspect of the tour, and the benefit to the premier events doesn't make up for that in my mind.
I'm just trying to figure out what weird echo chamber they're in that everyone thought last year's system didn't work. I mean, they seem upset with the fact that you needed 700 points, but I don't think anyone else is upset with the fact that you needed 700 points. Like, I didn't hear one person say, like, not one person, that the people who qualified last year didn't deserve it based on the point system, or that someone who didn't make it did deserve it. It seemed like it worked perfectly okay. So I'm confused where they got the idea that they needed to change that. Like, just because their numbers were wrong? I don't really know.
See, I get the idea of thinking that, you know, there wasn't enough separation between ranking and premier. I mean, because of the sheer number of ranking events compared to premieres, that, you know, winning a premier event wasn't as big of a deal as they necessarily wanted it to be. I just feel like this year they took the hammer too far. You know, you can take away some of the points in ranking events. Okay, you can add points to premier events. That's fine. But doing both and doing them to the degree that they did, I don't understand why that was the case.
I have a bone to pick at large. Where were we before this damn tour? If you can't show up to your regionals or show up to your tournaments, then is that the Pro Tour's fault? I'm sure it doesn't help if it's disincentivizing to the pro players. But that shouldn't stop you from going FGC. Support your local scenes.
Yeah. You know, my takeaway from all this was, the first thing that came to my mind was the whole one point, like the point of pride, right? And we've talked about that at length and make jokes about it. It's almost a meme at this point in the FGC, no pun intended. But like last week, I think we talked about One Frame Link. Did we talk about it on the show? One Frame Link coming out and say, you know, like we actually organized the structure. I actually have it in front of me right now. I'll just read it. One Frame Link says, the point of offering one point is to give players who may not normally get on the CPT leaderboard an opportunity to do so. A lot of players see it as a point of pride / accomplishment just to get on the board. So that comes out as like the explanation for that, right? And then just like the next day or two later, Michael Martin comes on and he says, you know, he said it much more to the effect of, no, that one point will matter. And like just with the way that things are set up, that's more of like a, that one point will make a, can be a decisive factor, a deciding factor into whether or not a player makes it in or gets a certain seeding. And actually, as we looked at the results and the current standings right now, a single point given like for certain players that are all like tied for like 29th or whatever, that would make be a big difference maker, right? So we'll see if that actually becomes the case at the end of the year when it actually matters. But I say all that to say you have One Frame Link on one hand that's saying one message, and then you have Capcom on the other hand saying a whole other message. And they're either – one is either lying or more likely they're just not in enough communication to get, you know, on the same page about this. Either way, it's not a good look for this. You know, it's not a professional look to have these two basically conflicting ideas or explanations for this thing. And that was like kind of the first thing that I took away from all this. It's like, man, come on, guys, get your act together.
In all fairness, One Frame Link came out a little later and clarified that what they were talking about was the existence of a tier of 1 point, not necessarily the placement of that tier.
Oh, okay. So, like, they had that last year as well for, like, 33rd place or whatever it was.
Right.
And that this year, that happens to be 7th place at ranking events. So, I guess that's fair, too. Hopefully...
Yeah,
go ahead.
Javi T.O. in our chat says, T.O. of Touchdown says, top 8 should get 10 points minimum. Intron Depot says, you should get 1 point for entering an event. Participation trophy.
I think in both instances, ultimately, like, the players that do well, like, the best players are going to be the ones that get in, because everybody's in the same boat. They're playing by the same rules, right? So maybe it's a bigger deal than we've been making it. And I know we've broken it down on the show before, and maybe we've kind of gotten to the bottom of that more or less. But it just feels like hopefully we can kind of move forward from here. But again, I also think that, like you guys were kind of getting at a second ago, maybe we revert back to last year's thing and just count this as like we thought we could make it better. It didn't really work. That's part of the whole understanding and learning process. You know, success is built on a bunch of stepping stones of failure or whatever. And we just, whatever, just end up doing what's best for the tour.
Next year is another year, right, of the CPT. Any other thoughts there on the point structure?
I think we kind of killed that one at this point.
Seems R.I.P. Some interesting choices there. Capcom is Trump and One Frame Link is Giuliani, or is it the other way around?
I'm not going to go there.
That's a bit of a stretch.
Let's talk about religion, too.
Yeah, again. Our boy Steve, Ace King, Officer Jurek, is going to drag us into this conversation. The great esports FGC Twitter war, started by none other than Dickie Lou, Richard Lewis, and I always forget his name. What's that dog from Wretch for Kotaku now?
Ian Max.
That's the guy. We were like off and on talking about it in the chat, and it always started this way in our group chat. Have y'all been following this shit? And all of us were like, no, not really. And Steve would go like, yeah, me either. Should we talk about this? and that happened a couple of times. What would you like to talk about, Steve?
Well, I just feel like we almost have to, because of how pervasive it was to the conversation within the FGC over this past weekend. For those of you who don't know, Richard Lewis is the now former host of E-League. He announced not too long ago that he was stepping away from the program. He didn't specify a reason, but he would later go on to his own stream and basically say that it was a lot of harassment and or shit that he was catching on behalf of his program, on behalf of E-League, esports in general, from the FGC being opposed to what they're doing, being opposed to their presence. So that was sort of the backdrop for all of this. I'm still not 100% sure what the flashpoint was, but there were some insults made towards Richard Lewis. There were insults made by Richard Lewis, things that were perceived as threats, things that actually were threats, just a whole lot of BS.
I noticed we don't even have slides for the worst things he said. that.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's being rude to people with anime avatars and to people of the furry community, even more rude than I was the other day when I said that I didn't understand it. Do you want me to read these quotes out that you selected?
Well, I think before we do that, I think that it's sort of indicative of a lot of the arguments that go on social media, where people are so tied up in fighting and arguing and being on the winning team that legit points, you know, legitimate points of view, whether you agree with them or not, get wrapped up in a whole bunch of needless name calling and negativity where it really takes away from the conversation and drives it into places where it doesn't really help anybody.
Yeah, you know? Well, as far as I'm concerned, he doesn't deserve to have his point heard, but
tribalism.
And I think, you know, there are some points where even if you don't agree, you can sort of say, huh, well, that makes sense. But then it gets wrapped in some stupidness, like the quote I have here. He went on his show talking about why the FGC really hasn't grown. Do you have that quote up?
Yeah.
All right, let's take a look at the first part. On his stream, he was pointing at Daigo, and he said, Daigo Umehara is an effing legend in esports, not just fighting games. His career earnings are like $175,000. It's insane. You have Counter-Strike players who play 1 year and make more than that. Why wouldn't you want a bigger, better economy for your pros? Why wouldn't you want that? I don't get it. Why you wouldn't want that? It's a point that's worth discussing. And then immediately he brings some unneeded negativity to distract from the discussion.
Hold it. Before you distract me with this separate point, is he saying his tournament winnings are 175,000?
He's saying his tournament winnings.
Because he makes a shit ton more than that every year.
He makes like 3 times more than that a year.
Okay, yeah. I'm pointing that out. That it's not like he's, you know, my wallet knuckle do having to sponsor himself, right? All right, so anyway, second part of this diatribe.
Second part is sort of indicative of this entire thing. He goes on to say, well, I do. I know why you want that. Because then the pros might separate themselves and you will be insignificant again. Mm. You will never be able to tell that one story about how you played the pro. Oh, I had a great series. I took 2 games off of him. No one cares, mate. Least of all the pro. They don't give a F. You are literally holding them back so that you can have that anecdote.
Damn.
How do you feel about that, Duncan?
99% of the people who love these open tournaments aren't even players who will ever play against these people. So I don't understand. That just seems like an irrelevant point. There's probably a few people who are like competitive but not pros who have had those thoughts. And I mean, he's not completely wrong in that sense. But to project that onto everyone seems ridiculous. Question. I think a lot of the people who like the open tournaments have never entered one.
Question here. How long does your average Counter-Strike match last? Anybody know?
I mean, it depends on what you mean. They're really short.
More than 5 minutes?
Yeah, the whole match? Yeah.
It's usually, you know, like 30 rounds, where an individual round might take like between 1 and 2 minutes, but it's 15 and then... Yeah. 15.
And how many people do you need to successfully play Counter-Strike?
It's 5v5, is it? 4v5.
Okay.
5v5.
How many people have to play Street Fighter to have a match?
2.
1v1. And how long do those matches go?
What do you mean?
What I'm getting at is that few other popular esports can even...
I agree, yeah. They can't support an open bracket. We're the only people who can.
Well, okay, so we should clarify something really quick. Just the implication here of what Lewis is saying is that, like, it's between the open bracket, the major tournament as we know, and then, like, I guess the invitational, right, where you just pick 8, 16, 32 pros to just come and play each other, and where you can have, you know, your Red Bull Kumite or your, I mean, even Capcom Cup, technically, right? Even it's an invitational in the sense that you have to qualify for it, but where you just have your select pros to play versus an all-day or 3-day event worth of a thing where you have, you know, your traditional major. So I think that's the kind of what we're discussing right now, right?
Well, I think this is an important note to make. You know, his argument in this entire thing is that he's not arguing against open brackets. He wants more invitationals to exist.
We have more invitationals every year.
And And he's saying that a lot of the pushback is from people assuming that more invitationals mean fewer open bracket events, and that a lot of the people who are criticizing that are pulling that unfairly out of what he's trying to say. But when you frame it again, or when you follow that up with the thing he followed it up with, it gets very easy to get wrapped up in that. It gets very easy to just write it off as a significant, or as just insulting something he doesn't know. And I think there's something to it. You know, we have the expectations that we have as viewers, as players, for events have been rising and rising every year. And yet a lot of us are against a lot of the common ways for events to make money, you know? So it becomes a situation where, do we want both sides of the, are we trying to ride both sides of the fence? Do we want more and more while not allowing tournaments or not encouraging tournaments to put that infrastructure in place to get more?
You know, there was something that came up in our group chat that I thought was interesting, and that was, we need the opinions, the true opinions of the pro gamers. That might be an interesting element in this conversation. How do the top pro players feel about this, right? Because he's like pointing a finger at the average pop monster, which I, just as a small side, I don't think it's technically accurate, because you can go to a tournament, not get your set, but still get your selfie and shake your hand and be like, dude, I met Justin Wong or whatever. What do you think?
How about this? Richard Lewis is mad because people were pissed off about E-League. E-League was an event where they invited the wrong people to the thing all the fucking time, and that's what people complained about. No one complained about the fact that there were invitational tournaments. People want more invitational tournaments. I have not heard almost anyone, as long as they don't forego open brackets for it, complain about invitationals. People complained about the way that invitational was run in a lot of ways. And, you know, congrats. Richard Lewis said, I don't even know where we're going with this. I feel like people just are hating on him, and he's acting like they're hating on his point. And I don't really think that's what's happening. I don't really think anyone disagrees with his point that hard.
It's a whole bunch of BS, you know. People are hating on him because they want to dunk on him. He's dunking on people because he wants to dunk on people.
He's not just dunking on people, though. He got so mean this weekend. It was just outright ridiculous. He's calling people mentally, you know, disabled, basically, for their beliefs and what they like. The guy shouldn't be talked about at all, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. And that's sort of the sad thing, because there's a lot of important things that need to come up. And a lot of aspects of this conversation, we're approaching those things, but then it becomes so wrapped up in this negativity, so wrapped up in this stupidity in a lot of cases, that it just gets buried behind, you know, wanting to dunk on somebody. So,
oh, kind of like our politics and stuff like that.
But again, I'm sorry to bring it back to this, but you were implying, because you know, you're trying to get us to face these hard truths. Hey, let's look past the fact that we like this guy or don't like this guy and actually listen to what he's saying, right? Richard Lewis hinted at pros favoring more invitationals but not wanting to say so publicly. If we could find, obviously I get it, nobody would want to say that, although you could probably find somebody to say it.
Just go to Chris G or Filipino Champ first.
Yeah, I was thinking F Champ. Like, he'd be like, yeah, fuck yeah, I wish
the
I could have more.
The pros want it, but how will we monetize it? I mean, the ones that are successful, and the ones that aren't have died. I think the more, like, as long as an invitational is something that people will watch and somehow sponsor, then they'll happen and we'll like them. I just don't understand why the point even needs to be made.
I think it's an argument. It's a discussion. It's for the future. This is like, we haven't made it to this fork in the road yet, and we might not come to this fork in the road, but the idea is, the implication is, we might get to this point where, like, the suits, those in power, those that are putting money down, are like, well, we're just going to do all invitationals or whatever. And then you have like the traditional major, the open, kind of go away. And then we're like, oh no, we don't want that to happen. Most of the community. Right. And so it's like, it's more of like a, what if the path that we're seemingly on right now leads to this? But I do agree that we're kind of getting our panties in a bunch before we even get to the point where we should. It's like, it's good to be aware, but we probably don't need to be investing this much urgency into that debate, considering we're not there yet. And we might not get there. So.
Yeah, don't you think, like, with Street Fighter V, you know, the big game coming out, with Dragon Ball Z, the big game coming out, don't you think that if it was going to happen, it would have happened by now?
We just got an Invitational, the Summit, for Dragon Ball Z, and everyone seems fucking thrilled about it.
But what I mean is, you know, this idea that a lot of people expected that, you know, once 2016 hit, that esports would strap a rocket to the back of fighting games and take it to the moon, you know, and that hasn't happened. You know, it kind of got there, then it kind of fell back, and, you know, so I don't know. Is it, you know, is it going to happen?
When Final Round says, or when Combo Breaker says, we're getting rid of our open bracket because we will make more money and it will be better because we do it as an invitational, that's when I think we have to worry.
Well, there's probably not going to be a Final Round anymore it is.
So. Yeah, but is that because of the same reasons we're talking about right now, or is that because Final Round
Let's use Combo Breaker as an example, maybe, or something. So a tournament that didn't shit all over itself.
Right, yeah, because, I mean, the Combo Breaker CEO, they seem to be flourishing, right? And I think
Texas Showdown, the bed, right? If I'm not mistaken,
Texas Showdown. They just broke even?
Well, I don't know how well they did, but I don't think they took a loss.
But I should point out that, like, Final Round, you know, a lot of their problems in 2016. Now, they had problems that had nothing to do with dealing with the growth. That had been problems in the past. But a lot of the issues they dealt with were because, you know, people expected so much out of this tournament and it wasn't able to deliver that.
Hey, now, I'm blocking here. Were
they weren't set up for success just because of being the first event on, you know, on the calendar after Street Fighter V's launch. So maybe, you know, if that was in place, then you wouldn't necessarily have them, you know, struggling right away. You know, I think it's worth discussing.
I want to discuss this. Bloomtoon just gave us a sub, and the message was he subs for Steve's E-League Challenger recaps.
Hey, well, I watch it.
Did something good.
I watch it so that if you don't want to, you don't have to.
Thank you. Your sacrifice will not go unnoticed.
I feel like I can appreciate on some level people getting really butthurt about Richard Lewis's potential hard truths, right? For example, not for example, but just in the context of, it is a really, really old scene, right? It has been a certain way for a really, really long time. A lot of that is couched in the grassroots and the pride of it being grassroots. I'm not saying there's no esports infiltration and that there isn't a lot to be gained there, and that there aren't some of our leaders in this community, like an Oxfy, who's, you know, dipped his toe in that and been successful, and we, you know, we're happy for that. But the idea to shit all over that and say that we're just like wanting to hold on to that to our own detriment is missing why somebody would want to do that, right? Speaking of Alex Vai, I remember 09er days. He came to Arcade UFO for something. And I can't remember what it was. Maybe it was some South by Southwest thing of all things. Speaking of esports, and I got my interview. I had my camera out, and I'm talking to him about the culture and how he rolled into Austin. The first thing he does is show up with Fubar Duck, and you know they crash at each other's places. If you want to go to another town and play some sets, there's always a bed you can stay at. I feel like that is also tied up to this idea of grassroots and the strong community ties. And when you threaten that or talk shit about that or belittle that or say that it's holding you back, it's like, man, fuck this guy, right? That's where I think he's missing the point. There's a lot more to this scene than making money. Man, there's a lot to unpack there, but I do think he missed that point. That's all I got, guys.
Yeah, and a lot of that, what he's going to say there, especially the inflammatory things like that, which are very much, like, there are parts that are clear that he's saying it out of an anger and frustration and from a place of pride than it is, like, that I'm trying to make things better. So you got to kind of, like, you know, sift through all of that. And I agree, like that wasn't worded very well, and that didn't help very much, right? And there's a pretty clear counter argument to it. But, like what Steve's saying, there are some really legitimate things that we have to at least, you know, take into account, answer, and have an answer for. So that's legit. But again, all of this is probably stuff that might come up down the road. And with, you know, only having like final round being the big issue, like the standard, or I'm sorry, the example, and not having like CEO and Combo Breaker, those events continuing to thrive. Texas Showdown doing great last weekend. I think we can hold off with, you know, kind of like growing more gray hairs or losing our hair over this for the time being.
And on that point, you want to talk about Gfinity, Steve?
I kind of do. So we talked about that season coming to a close last week and naming their...
Now, remind us what Gfinity is again, just in case somebody doesn't know.
Gfinity is it was a weekly, or it still is because there's going to be a fourth season, a European esports event that has three different games. One of them is Street Fighter V, and it uses the team format. You have teams of seven players, I believe seven or eight. Each week you select three to play a match against one of the other teams. Whoever wins four games out of the first to seven gets the win. Top teams advance to the playoffs. And then you have your champion, which this past season was Nordavind, which was the team that Phenom.
Phenom. Yeah.
Yes, I can. I was going to get there. So this kind of brought me to it sort of ties in to our previous discussion, because one of the points that was brought up was that a lot of sponsors are afraid to invest in players. A lot of teams are afraid to invest in players because they're worried about not being able to have their name on stream if a player gets knocked out early in open tournaments. So events like invitationals are more pleasing. Events like this, where not only do you have a player sponsor, but you own the team, obviously that's more beneficial for sponsors, so they're more likely to invest into something like this. So it's a bit more appealing. So, you know, team events like this could be on could become a bit more commonplace. There were a few things from this past season that I didn't like. Obviously, the fact that it was on Facebook instead of Twitch was a bit upsetting, although I don't know how much Facebook is involved in the production, so that may be a benefit for where the benefit of that outweighs the loss of Twitch views, especially since it also airs on TV in the UK. But where I think they fell a little short this year is in the team format. It was too easy for one player to dominate. You know, you have Phenom, where if a set goes the full seven games, one player can play three. So if you've got Phenom on your team, all the other guys have to do is win one game and you go undefeated. So I feel like having more players involved, you know, maybe expanding to five players on for a match instead of just three would make it harder to carry, or for one player to just carry the entire team. That also sort of ties into this idea that the biggest thing they thought was that the perception was that it wasn't a big deal. There was one week, the final week of the regular season, where CCL's team sent in nothing but their backups, even though this was the week that determined whether or not they make the playoffs, because there was a CPT event that weekend, and all of the first choice players were there instead of the team, with the team. So if that happens, what sort of message does that send the viewer? So I hope they're able to adjust the schedule so it doesn't run opposite the CPT, so that we can see the best players all the time. And I hope they, you know, expand it so that the team aspect is more important and it feels more like a team event versus a handful of individual matches.
And you got to you know, there's definitely room for improvement with all of this stuff, you know, but you also have to take into account that this is still an emerging and new and evolving in its early stages kind of an entity with the whole, how are we going to embrace all of these new events? How are we going to, you know, balance doing both, you know, open bracket and invitationals and you know, an entity like Gfinity, like where does that have its place? And then, you know, how much time should we, you know, all of those things. Those are details that will, if these things continue, get ironed out. And you got to expect that there's going to be clashes and stuff, clashes and things like that in these early stages. So not to say that, like, don't keep evolving and don't keep getting better, but I understand that these kind of things are going to happen. Let's just continue to move forward, learn from them, find the appropriate amount of time to devote to this thing versus this thing versus that thing. And hopefully in the not too distant future, we can get a good balance and a good variety going on and everyone will be happy.
That brings us to the end of the show. I did want to give a shout out to one of our longtime viewers, Johnny Beaver for the win. He told me over the weekend at Texas Showdown, I have one sub to give. I broke my streak. I think he said like 2 years of subbing to Max's channel every month. He gave it to us. Fuck you, Max.
We took one of Max's yes. subscribers.
Thank you.
Shout out to Beaver for the win. Streak. Take that, Maximilian.
You should have given him $4 or whatever so he could just do both, but that's better that he didn't.
Can we cover the last two news bits real quick?
What you got, dog?
One, BlazBlue Tag demo launches tonight/tomorrow. If you pre-order the game on PSN, you get access to the demo a few days early. It will be a completely open demo on May 12th. So it will run through the 14th, and then after that, there will be an offline demo that's open for all. You'll have four players available or four characters available. Unless you've pre-ordered the game, then you'll have 20 characters available on that. And then the other thing is that we're getting down to the nitty-gritty in terms of the summit. Voting for the summit is down to 20 players. Tomorrow it will cut down to 16. So go to smash.gg/SOP to get your votes in. The voting will run through the 16th over several rounds. May 14th is when the first of the five players get voted into the summit. So be sure to follow that.
Cool. Thank you for those last bits of news. And thank you, everybody home, for watching. Anybody who subbed, anybody who followed, anybody who gave us some bits, and anybody who watched, we're grateful, and we'll be here again in 1 week's time. Bye, guys.